Welcome back to the Silk and Purple Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Fuquay. Today, I have two very fun people with me. One you already know, my husband, Jeremy, and one you've not met yet. His name is Brother Stoney Alexander. Now, I know that's not your government name. What's your government name?
Stoney Payne Alexander.
That's your government name?
My government name.
Your birth certificate name.
Would you like to see my ID?
I'm not gonna vet you that hard, but I have Brother Stoney here today. My husband and I have known him for a good little while. He's such an inspiration to many in our church, mostly because of his background and his story, but present day it's because of his worship. And a testament to that is I was looking on our church page for something to put, you know, on the cover photo for the podcast, and every picture that I found of him at the church, he is turned around backwards praying for somebody, and you couldn't see his face. And so I was like, what a testament to just his attitude toward life. So today I don't have a strict format. I'm just gonna loose him and let him go. So Brother Stoney, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and let us know your testimony.
I'm Stoney Alexander. I'm raised up here in Manifest, Louisiana. When I was 10 years old, it was the first time I ever used drugs. And I played a little bit. And, I mean, what's weird about it, my dad, he run the first drug dog in Catahoula Parish. So, you know, it's a little wild. But anyhow, as I growed up, I kept messing up. And just one thing led to another, kept getting worse, and growed up, had kids, that didn't slack me up, and it got to the point that I was selling drugs, I wasn't good people, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to at all, as a father, as a person, and I would say that I was a Christian, but I now wasn't doing Christian things, you know, I just believed Christian, because that's where I was raised. Years rocked on, and I got arrested, and I went to jail for 15 months. Had, you know, all that time clean, come out, stayed clean for a minute, and then started drinking again. And then I started going around places, kind of like a shark, you know, and it goes around those little schools of fish, and it'll swim by it, and it acts like it's going to go in there, and then it'll dart off. I was doing that. I was hanging out with people that I knew were doing drugs. I knew that they had drugs on them, but I would hang out with them and, like, say, all however long at night, whatever, I'd be drinking, whatever, and I would never ask. And that rocked on, and then finally, one night I asked. And within an amazingly short period of time, I went all the way back to where I was pre-arrest. And the first time I went, they arrested me, I probably weighed 135, soaking wet. You know, if you see my mug shots, it scares you, scares me. But anyhow, I went back, and I was just... I sold drugs so I wouldn't have to steal for it, but, I mean, it wasn't good. You know, I was putting my kids in bad situations, you know, and you don't think people pay attention to you. They do. I'm going to kind of fast forward. I was taking a friend of mine's kid to a basketball game after I got clean this last time. Caden, he's riding with me. He goes, "Mr. Stoney, proud of you." I laughed, I said, "You are? Yep." "So what for?" "You got off that stuff."
Wow.
You know, this kid, he's 10 when he says this. When I was doing it, and he knew that I was, but I guess, you know, that would have been 3 or 4 years before that. So, you know, you're looking at 6 years old, 7 years old. He didn't know what that stuff was, but he knew I was on it. And he knew I got off. He said, "Yep, you got off that stuff. Didn't think you could do it." You know what I mean? That just it blew my mind. I love that kid. But anyhow, I was out there bad again. And I remember I didn't sleep a whole lot. And one night that I did go to sleep, I laid down. And, you know, I had knew I'm talking about a sit down to myself moment where I knew I needed God. I knew I needed to get off drugs. I knew I needed a change. But I could not make myself make the turn by myself. It took getting arrested. Anyway, my daughter Layla, she comes, Daddy, get up. I'm like, what is it? Cops are at the door. You know what I mean? So I knew it wasn't good. You know what I mean? I knew it wasn't good at all. I knew I probably wouldn't be able to lay back down in my bed. But, you know, you don't run from them. You go, you can, but it don't work out good. Mace don't taste good, they say. But anyhow, I went to the door, and the guy, da-da-da-da, and can we search your house? Well, go ahead. We got warrants, da-da-da-da. They come in, and I'm sitting outside, and I'm in handcuffs, and, you know, they come out, and they finna go, and Piper looks at me and says, Daddy, how long? Oh, see, she remembered last time, you know, when I got arrested, and it was 15 months before I got to come back home. Daddy, how long? Baby, I don't know. And I looked over at Layla, and she had that look. And Layla, she's special. That child's special. And I wasn't too sure. She wasn't finna try to do something to a cop. And I was like, look, y'all. I said, Daddy needs help. I knew I needed help. I said, Daddy can't keep, y'all know Daddy can't keep going the way he's going. And they're like, yeah. So they took me to jail, and it was December 18th of 2020. And it was right around Christmas holiday, so the judges and stuff really wasn't in there. And I was in there, and it rocked on. About 10 days later, the judges and stuff come back. It was after Christmas and stuff like that. It was the 28th. And everybody else in the jail, in the bullpen down there, they, you know, they was excited because all they knew is they had to go upstairs, get magistrated, set a bond, make a call, get a bail bondsman. They going, help me look. Me and this other guy, we done got comfortable because we knew it was going to be there. And, let me take you back as a step. But the night before, the jailer come by my the bullpen where I was at, and he said, Stoney, I ain't going to call the lady's name. A lady called up here and said, in the morning, when the courthouse opens, she's going to come put a property bond up, and you're going to get bailed out. I was more scared right then than I was when the cops came. You know, it was actually kind of a relief because I didn't have to worry about dope heads coming to the house and bugging me and phone ringing and worrying about the cop. The cop part was already took care of. You know, since I really didn't have a lot of stress compared to what I had. And I told him, I said, look, I said, tell her don't come. He looked at me. I said, if she calls back, you come get me, and I'll tell her, because she's not going to believe you. Tell her not to come, because once they come, like if you come to bail me out, I'm in a jail, so I'm not seeing you go up there. You done did it. They're going to pull me out of there when all the stuff's done. They're not going to let me go back in. I knew I needed to get as much time behind me at that courthouse where it was safe, then have to worry about going here, there, yonder. Anyway, I told him, I said, don't let her. And I realized he works off at night, and the next morning is going to be it was a new shift coming from Monday and Tuesday. I said, you tell the guys to leave a note to the morning shift not to let somebody come in here and bail me out. He said, you're serious, ain't you? I'm like, yeah. I said, I need help. I don't need a guy. Because, as a matter of fact, to be quite honest with you, I knew where some drugs was at the house. You know what I'm saying? I knew where I could just, and it wouldn't have been good. You know what I mean? I'd been there 10 days, but still, I knew it wouldn't be good. So he said, you serious? I said, yeah, I'm serious. And he said, well, I'm going to make a phone call. And he called Brad Bradley, and the next day, like I said, a lot of people say they're going to do stuff, they don't do it, so anyhow, I'm sitting there, and these other guys, like I said, they're excited, you know, they're giving us their stuff, You know what I mean? Here, you take this. Don't you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, okay. I'm kind of, well, I got some more stuff, and they excited. Well, while they're upstairs being magistrated or whatever, I get called out of my cell. And it's Brad Bradley, and he says, Stoney, would you be interested in going to Bubba Ezell's Shelter of Faith? And I was like, yeah, yeah. He said, well, just give me a minute, see what I can do. He said, sign this. I signed it. I could have signed my life away. I just signed it. He went upstairs. 1:30 that evening, the people from Shelter of Faith were there to pick me up. That day, the 28th of December, is the last day I smoked a cigarette in my life. Last day I had a dip in my life. It's almost 5 years. This December will be 5 years. I'll be half completely clean of everything. You know what I mean? And proud of that. But anyhow, I went to Shelter Faith. It's a year-long program, and it changed my life. Just to kind of give you a short rundown of it, the Shelter Faith gets you to a spot where you ain't got nothing else to do but get closer to God,
yeah,
and get better. We did Monday through Fridays at 5:30, which now I hear they're doing it 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, but then it was 5:30 in the morning. We were in the mess hall, had our Bibles open. 3 days a week we had a guy that kind of was over us, and he taught Bible lessons. But regardless, we had our Bibles open for an hour, and we were reading the Word. Every evening when we got out of work, you know, we were at a God-related something, service somewhere. It was Celebrate Recovery some nights. We went to Bethany Worship Center in Crowville one night, and that's where I got the Holy Ghost. That was, they didn't do a lot of, there wasn't a lot of apostolic things that they did, but that place was apostolic-ish, if you get me. And it was a Friday night deal. We'd go up there, and they would have a praise and worship, and then they would either have a testimony or somebody preach or something like that. You know what I mean? But it was the closest thing we got to apostolic church. And I'd had a little bit of apostolic background because of my Aunt Cater Ruth. You know, she would make deals with me. I could go spend the night with her, but I couldn't go back home. If she wasn't finna bring me home before church, I had to go to church. I went to Brother Knapp's church up there a lot. And then, but anyhow, one Friday night, I think everybody had COVID, and then we got out, and just everybody went, you know, and we was just glad to be out of there. And we was up there, and we was praising, they was singing. And I went up, you know, from time to time during that worship service, people would go up there and kneel down at the altar, kind of pray, you know what I mean, and get back up, raise your hands, praise, you know what I'm saying? Just, you know, when you get free from addiction, that freedom is a high itself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you got guys, they just really don't know what's going on, but they're just so glad to not be sick and tired, mm-hmm, that they're worse for thanking God. Now, some of those same guys went back and messed up right behind that. But anyhow, I went to the altar, and I went to praying. And I was praying, but I think somebody might have come over, laid a hand on me, prayed on me for a minute, and then they went on about their business. And next thing I know, I mean, I was talking in tongues. I don't know that anybody else there seen it. I don't know that anybody else knew what was going on. But that moment was a life changer.
Yeah.
I mean, completely. Look, I can take you to that church and take you to the spot on the carpet at the altar. I'm talking about just like I got GPS. I can see it in my head, right? I mean, it's odd, but I can take you to it. Anyhow, after that night, things went to change, and I went to diving in my Word. And, you know, when I got there, you know, it was a non-tobacco facility, you know. And we asked, I worked at the little restaurant, and I asked, me and a guy asked, you know, why can't we dip? Why can't we smoke? You know, that's illegal. You know what I mean? That ain't getting you high or nothing like that. And the guy that was there, he said, look, he said, if I make you mad and you're dipping or you're smoking, the first thing you're going to do is you, if you're smoking, you're going to that shirt pocket. If you're dipping, you're going to that back pocket. We want you to go to the Word.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And we had a guy there at the time I didn't really care for, but in hindsight, this guy was preparing me for life outside of that shelter. Because the shelter, that was the right word for it, because we were sheltered.
Yeah.
You know, I had 30 guys there that you'd have had to fought through them just to get to me to whatever, you know what I'm saying, like brothers, you know what I mean, all going through the same thing. And this guy knew that when you got out in that world, the devil's not going to follow. We had guys that they would commit to get baptized there, and the devil would jump on them, and before they even got baptized, they would leave, be gone from shelter. And I mean, I'm talking about be on a high, you know, fire for God and stuff, but then just fall out. Or they'd get baptized and think, well, now I got to, you know, nothing's going to happen to me. I'm baptized. I've done made it. You know what I mean? And they didn't realize that the devil doubles down then. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy, he would throw I call them curveballs. You know, he wasn't just trying to antagonize you, but he would do things to see how you react, to kind of season you, how you react and stuff like that. And I'd get mad at him, and I'd go get in my bunk, and I'd get my Bible out. And somewhere in my house, there's a notebook with probably about 200 or 300 Bible verses that I went through, and I would just write down until I calmed down. You know what I mean? And that guy's one of my best friends now. I can call him right now. You know what I mean? He'll pray for me. You know what I'm saying? You know, his style is a big part of the reason why I'm still sober today. And I hadn't felt because I didn't, you know, I come out proofed. You know what I mean? And I don't know if y'all know much about addiction recovery, but it's probably, if you got a super successful place, you're looking at 20%.
Wow.
Maybe. That's out of the, you know, and I'm talking about people like, say, the graduate programs. Out of the 100% of the ones that graduate, maybe 20% of them make, probably closer to 15.
Hmm.
You know, depending on the program. Bubba's program's pretty successful. But anyhow, you know, I graduated that program, and let me tell you how God works. Halfway through it, the DA in my court, they were trying to make me take a 2-year sentence, which if I'd have took that 2-year sentence when I started, in 6 months, you know, the way the system works, I'd have been out in 6 months instead of doing a year to program, but I needed the year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The guy didn't really want, the program didn't mean as much to him as it meant to me, I'll say that.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to have to take the time, and then I'd have still come home about the same time because I just had to do 6 months in jail and come, but I needed every day of that program. Anywho, the same sheriff that got his investigators to investigate me and sent his investigators to the judge to get the warrant to arrest me is the same sheriff and the same investigators that stood up for me when they seen, you know, I was coming to court and they seen, you know, golly, is he going to keep getting bigger? You know what I mean? Golly, what they feeding him, you know what I mean? Is anybody else eating up there? Because he is, you know what I mean? And anyhow, you know, the sheriff went to bat for me. Him, Bubba Ezell, Brad Bradley, they went to bat for me. You know what I mean? Didn't have to. You know what I mean? But
so I have a question about the program. What did you learn most about yourself? And you can be as general as you want in
you
that.
You mean to tell you, I learned my favorite Bible verse there, and I'm my only child, so, you know, I'm a selfish person. Just straight up, I'm selfish. I didn't have a whole bunch of heathen brothers to fight with and what all. It was me. So I was selfish. My favorite verse is John 3:30. He must increase, but I must decrease. me realizing that I was not the most important person in the world, that just because, and necessarily just because I had an opinion on something, it didn't necessarily need to be voiced.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, sometimes the best answer is no answer.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just be quiet, you know, because, you know, when I got there, you know, after about 3 months, you know, I was sober and I done got the Holy Ghost and I'm feeling good. I'm, you know, trying to tell Bubba and them how to run their place. You know what I'm saying? I'm on it. You know, you know how many times Bubba's come to me since I graduated and said, you know, Stoney, remember back when you said this, we should do, you know how many times he said, you know, I should have listened to you? Zero. Zero. Because, you know, and he wasn't wrong. You know what I mean? But anyhow, you know, that in itself, you know, I am not, you know, and that verse is a catch 22, because there's no way that you can let God increase in your life and you not go up with him.
That's right.
You know, the only thing you're decreasing those bad habits and stuff like that. At Bubba's, I got good habits. I got sitting by my mom at church. My kids, when they got to come, because see, there on Sundays, only you could go home from on Sundays from after church to 9 o'clock at night, but your family had to be at church with you, or whoever mm-hmm. had to be at church. It wasn't, no, we'll come pick you up after church. No, you had to be there.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing. There's no telling how many family members of people that was in the program got baptized and it changed their lives.
Yeah.
Because they was going there just at starting. The only reason they was there because they loved the person that was in there and they wanted, you know, to support them. And then they come and they get a blessing. You know what I mean?
That might speak to why his program is more successful.
Yes, yes, yes. And you know, Bubba's a great guy. I love him. Him just like that other guy, I can call him anytime. You know what I mean? He's drugged me to places. You know, to do testimonies and stuff. He used to, like, say, we come to Harrisonburg one time, and his program is based in Franklin Parish. I guarantee you there's more people from Catahoula Parish in his program than it is from Franklin Parish. Probably more people from Catahoula Parish in that program than any other parish. And when I was there, there would be somebody come in from California one day, or they, you know, and then just all over, we got to go there, and each one of us was going to get up and do a little testimony. Well, the church we went to, the First Baptist Harrisonburg, I could throw a rock and bust a window out at my house from their parking lot. And, y'all, I got there, and I was, you know, I'm at home, you know what I mean? My mama ain't got to drive over, she's there, you know, I'm at home. And I got up there when it was my turn to talk, and I said the words, Harrisonburg, Louisiana. And then I froze. I could not get another word out. I sat there and I was choking up. I was choking up and I was choking up. And I started to cry. And I told him, I said, I owe y'all an apology for the things that I did across the road. You know, because they over there, you know, I'm apostolic, they're Baptist, but they're trying to win people to God.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm over there, people's coming and buying drugs.
Oh my gosh.
And then whatever's going on, you know what I mean? It wouldn't, you know, it was heaven and hell.
Yeah.
Right.
Just the only thing, there was just a road in between us. But, and those people, they were, after I apologized, my words came freely. You know, tears dried up. And, you know, and I had all kind of preconceived things I was going to say, but none of that come out. You know what I mean? But anyhow, we rocked on through the program. I graduated it. I come home, and I was lucky. You know, everybody in that program, they can't go home. Because I didn't have to worry about going home and mama having a meth pipe
mm-hmm.
sitting on the coffee table.
Yeah.
You dig what I mean? Or four or five cousins coming by. Or what, you know, even, you know, the people that's supposed to be your family, you know what I mean, that was still out there. I had friends, and several of them still to this day, they found a place over there to live because they knew they couldn't come home. A good friend of mine, little Ricky Seals, he died recently. He went to the program, and he had no Christian background, no church. Only time he'd ever been to a church was funerals. And he was there for about a week while I was there, and God went to dealing with him and got to changing him, and he was kind of, and then all of a sudden the devil, and he bucked and left. Well, I went back to the program one Sunday to visit after I graduated. Who do I see out in the parking lot? Little Rick Seals. And he's fat like me. So he'd been there a little minute. You know what I'm saying? And this guy, he dug in, and he, that time, he grabbed a hold of God. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, like the lady that grabbed Jesus by his coattail and tugged on it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He grabbed on it so hard, if Jesus kept walking, Jesus had been naked. And I'm serious. And he's taking up the offering. He's standing up for anybody. If any one of those guys went up there to pray, he's up there and he's praying with them. You know what I mean? And then he graduates. He's still there. He moved up there. You know what I'm saying? He's working up there. He would visit home, but he lived up there.
Yeah.
Okay. The guy he worked for brought him to Wayside, Brother Junior Cotton's church. And that flipped the switch for this kid, y'all. When I say, just like Brother Poole's been preaching beards and mustaches off of people here recently, listen to me. My man shaved and got, look, he big old boy then. You couldn't outrun him. You know what I mean? I'm a good side lady. You might outrun me on baseball field. You're not going to outrun me in that church. Ain't going to do it. And this dude was on fire, and he had the Holy Ghost, and, I mean, it glowed off of him. Well, I'm on my grader one day, and I'm grading out in the hills, and I get a phone call from the guy I told you that throws the curveballs. Little Ricky had a house trailer fall on him while he was at work. It killed him. And it broke my heart, but then I thought, Ricky got a Holy Ghost.
Yeah.
Little Ricky woke up on streets of gold.
Yeah.
You dig what I'm saying? I bet you he ain't stopped running.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm just saying. You know, and that's, you know, somebody, I made the statement, that's all I can draw from it, that he was saved. And, but you know what? That's all what it's about.
Right.
You know, you can come to church and say, you know, cancer's a lot of people come, when they get cancer, they come to church and pray for. You know what? You might come to church and God might heal you. But if you come to church and get the Holy Ghost, it don't matter.
That's right.
If he heals you or not.
That's right.
Because you just got a short, you just, you know, this.
It's the best miracle.
It's the best miracle. Yeah. It's where it's at. You know, going to heaven, I'd hope I'd rather go to heaven and have a hard time here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, the shepherd, you know, he'd have one sheep, and I probably with me, you know, kept running off, and he'd always leave the 99, go to the one, and get him. Sometimes he'd get tired of it, he'd break the leg, so it couldn't run off, and he'd pack it.
Yeah.
He'd have to pack it. Okay? I'd rather limp in heaven.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Then run in hell. You know what I mean? And that's where Ricky's. And that just, you know, it's kind of a sad story. I didn't mean to be sad on here. But, you know, people's got to realize that going to heaven is more important than whatever you got going on here. Because this ain't going to last. You know what I mean? I don't care the riches, you know. And I do believe that we in the end times. I believe it. It's too much stuff happening. It's time to get your heart right.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was at that program, you know, you're talking about, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Well, you know what? In that valley, that's where the good dirt is.
Yeah.
That's where, just about any valley you find, there's going to be a clear stream of water running through it. The Lord provides for you. He provides you water. You're in that good ground, where the good growing's done. You know what I mean? Even if you're in the scariest valley in the world, at somewhere between 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock, you look up, you're going to see the sunshine.
Yeah.
That's right.
You know, you're saying, God's saying, I'm still here. In that valley, he's going to, like I said, he provides, you get everything you want out that stream to survive. You know, it might be scary when it gets dark and the sun gets over and them shadows is down on him. You know, but that's just the devil. That's the way the devil works. And smoke and mirrors. You know what I'm saying? You, the devil can't do nothing to you, but if he can get you to, like Brother Poole was talking about, he's going to get you away from the flock.
Yeah.
Then he can deal with
he
you.
He can deal with you.
You know what I mean?
Brother Stoney, it sounds like to me, though, the number one thing is the true identity change. It's not the staying the same, whether you move your location or whether you come back to Harrisonburg.
Yeah.
You change your identity. And once you change your identity, it seems like to me people don't recognize Stoney the drug addict. They recognize Stoney the runner.
I got a story about that. Brother Jordy's boy Sawyer, he would usually after church on Sunday mornings, they go to their nana's to eat, Brother Jordy's mama's. And I'm one of them firm believers that if you spend time with me and get to know me, you can say what you want to say about me because you done put in the time,
yeah.
Good, bad, or ugly. You know, say Stoney ugly. That's cool. You was there. You looked at him for a week.
You were there.
Well, Miss Patricia and them, they seen me at my worst. And these people, when I say got my back, didn't have to, they got my back. They love me. It's always got my back, you know, and encouraging. And I don't know what they was talking about. Brother Jordan was telling me. They was talking about me. And all of a sudden, my man Sawyer, he looks up and says, "You talking about Brother Stoney?" You know what I mean? Hey, look, I fight a bear over that kid. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you talking about Brother Stoney. That's right. Because that's what I want to be identified. I want to be identified as a Christian. I want to see people get saved. I got kids that's lost. You dig what I'm saying? Because they seen how I was living.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I would, like Brother Poole was telling me this morning, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't bringing them to church. You know, I'm going to tell you, dude, when you come in that prayer room and that little man's behind you, that does something to me.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? He might not know what's going on, but he knows what to do. You
That's
know
right.
what I'm saying? He's around it. You know, and there's several of these kids around here that we got, and we got a great group of kids. They are in the altar. They're altar workers.
Yeah.
They are altar yeah. workers. They are in there, and you'll see them put their hand on them, and they praying.
Yeah.
It ain't praying. They ain't up there just making fun faces at their friends. They praying. They
yeah.
don't care what's going on over here, over there. They praying for somebody, and that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we're blessed, you know. But anyhow, when I got home, I was going to Wayside, and it was just seemed like it was so far to drive. So I come back, and I started going across the road from the house at First Baptist. And then I started going at Birds Creek, where my mom goes and her husband preaches. And they didn't have a lot going on at night services and stuff like that. So I was getting up. I was going to church from 11 o'clock to 12:15, and that was Jesus for the week. I ain't got to tell y'all, that ain't enough.
Yeah.
And God got to dealing with me. And I don't know if I was headed for a relapse or what I was headed for or if I was even headed for anything, but God dealt with me. You need to do something different. And I started, like, on Sunday nights, I'd go to Wallace Ridge, or I'd go to Myers Bend, or I'd go, you know, different churches around, you know what I mean? And on a Friday night, I come out here to a youth rally. It's supposed to be geared to the youth. Man, the adults have more fun at any youth rally. I don't care what nobody tells you. They can say what they want. The kids have a great time. But the adults, I think, get more out of youth rallies than anybody. And, man, I just... My daughter Piper, she was, you know, she'd been apostolic. She was already here. You know,
she
what
was
I mean?
Waiting on you.
Yeah, and so I would go to church with Mama on Sundays, still be by Mama. And then I started to come here Wednesdays and Sunday nights. And Piper said to me, she said, "Daddy, why don't you just start coming here?" I was like, "Well, you know, I got to be in church with Mama." Well, I went to Wayside's building dedication, and Brother Poole talked up there for a second. And he was speaking. He spoke a little bit about tithes. He wasn't long, and he took up the offering, whatever. And I got to thinking, you know what? I need to pay my tithe. I need to put down roots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can be the prettiest flower in the world, but if you ain't got no roots, you're not going to be thought. You're not going to last long.
That's right.
So I made up my mind. And that next Sunday, I paid tithes. First time I ever paid tithes in my life. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't care if people believe what they want to believe. When I started paying my tithes, pastor didn't treat me no different. People ain't treat me no different. But things changed.
Yeah.
That's right.
When I made that commitment to God, God doubled down with me. And I'm talking about, it's like now, I'll be walking and he'll like pick his head around a tree. I told you I had you. You know, I see him. And if you look for God, you will see him.
That's right.
If you seriously are looking for God and things, me and my daughter Layla, she went to church with me up at Wayside on I think it was a 2 o'clock service or a revival service. You know, she went with me. And she's not much in the church, but I'm praying. She's sitting up front with me, very front row, which that's in the danger zone, you know. Nobody sits up there front. That's why I knew I always got a seat. So I was sitting up there, and I was praising and whatnot, and the preacher was talking, and I was looking over, and I didn't want to spook her, you know what I'm saying? But I knew she needed prayer. I looked behind her, and Sister Daphne, Mont Pierre, she's got her hand on. I don't even know if Layla knew she had her hand on. Mm-hmm. She's sitting there praying for that baby. Man, I'm going to tell you, my eyes teared up because that's God. God said, "Look here, Stoney.
That's right.
I know that if you ask her to come up, it's going to spook her and she might walk
that's
out.
Right.
Yeah.
But I got my saint here. I got one of my good saints over here, and she sees the need. And she, man,
that's
woo.
Right.
That's
why it's so important.
I'm going to make a lap around here.
We don't have a service to waste because what you think is just another service,
man.
Somebody else is bringing their baby or their mama or their daddy, and they're saying, "I can't do it, but God sends somebody," and you've got to be tapped in. It's so important.
Yeah, and I just, since I've been here, you know, and I've been here a little over a year now, and look, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, my dad's got some land in Arkansas, and there's some good hunting up there. I told him, I said, you know, I'd be up there, but I can't get new life to move.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't make much at my job, but I'd rather not make much at my job and be close enough to where I could be here every service.
Yeah.
You know, Wednesday nights is important. It's summertime without Wednesday nights. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I just don't like it. Because I need it. When I'm on my road grader, I got a little JBL speaker, and you go on YouTube, and I'm listening to Brother Poole, or I'm listening to Brother Norris Poole, and then, look, you want to get blessed, you get on there, and you go hear some of his old messages, his sermons. Hey, it's serious. All right, I branched out a little bit, and if I know Brother Poole approves of them, I'll listen to them, like the ones from NYC, you know, Brother Hammond, Brother Garnett, and there's another guy, a heavyset guy, I don't know who he was. He preached "Help Wanted," and then, man, I wished I hadn't waited so long to listen to that sermon because it was good. And I don't even know if the radio works on that grader, but that's all I listened to is preaching. But, you know, I had several years where I wasn't going to church at all, so I got a lot to make up for.
Yeah.
That's right. It's an identity change. I mean, it's all I hear is an identity change, and I get to thinking about Ruth. She could have stayed in Moab.
Yeah.
She could have stayed where she was,
mm-hmm.
and she'd have missed out on what God had in store. But instead, decided that she was going to make that travel.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It truly is amazing.
Anytime you put yourself out for God and you go that extra, you go that uncomfortable, you know, you go knock on that door that you really ain't sure about knocking on, stuff like that, you know, God honors that kind of stuff. Then you can't tell me he don't. He blesses prayer. If you don't believe me that he ain't blesses prayer, you go ask my mama. She had about 20-some-odd years, 20, 25 years off and on a prayer for me, you know, God, when's it going to change, you know, and she never quit praying.
Yeah.
And she, you know, when I was out there in that world and I was messed up, I mean, it's more than just getting messed up on drugs. It messes you up. The devil uses that and he messes you completely up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing that you're able to put your clothes on. I mean, and I'd be going through something and Mama would tell me, son, you need to get down on your knees and pray to God for the answer. And I'd get so mad. I'd get biting mad because I thought that she didn't know the answer. So she was giving me a cop-out. You know what I'm saying? Because she didn't want to deal with me. Whole time, she's giving me the keys to the car.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what I'm saying? Because prayer, look, I'm going to tell you. Just the other day, I'm out on Red Cut Road. I'm on my grader. I get into a little hairy situation on trying to clean out an old lateral. And me and that $250,000 equipment slides into an embankment. And it's customized, but I got out of there. But I wiggled around in it. I did everything I could think to do. When I got out, I'd look at it, and I'd get back in. I'd wiggle around, try to do a little more, back up, forward. I got to find it. God, please help me get out of this. Because, I mean, I got people on the way, but when they got there, I mean, I don't know that they could have pulled me out. I got back up in that machine. Kind of got a little calm, and I got out of it. I couldn't believe it. I called my boss, and I was actually in shock. I was like, look, she different. And I got her out of there. You know what I mean? But he answered so many of my prayers. You know what I mean? Just I've been praying for a personal issue with one of my kids, man. And it's kind of like some prayers, you know, you just watch a ship turn in the ocean. Whole time it's turning, but you can't really see it till it gets around. And this kid, you know, he followed in my footsteps. But now he's doing right. You know what I mean? He ain't got him in the church house yet. But I ain't quit praying for him. You know what I mean? But he's starting to do things differently, you know, and change, making changes and looking. Man, and I thank God. You know what I mean? He has never let me down, period, in not any situation. There's times when, you know, I don't know why he still dealt with me. And that's real talk. I don't know why, but he did. And I made a statement. I'm going to live for God as hard or harder than I pulled for the devil back in the day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, I can't sit down when Brother Poole makes a point. Sometimes he don't even make a point. I don't know. I stand up. Number one, he don't need to sit by. He don't need to be up there doing it by himself.
Yeah.
But I owe it every bit of my praise to it. You know, I owe God everything. Not a little bit because I was okay, and then I was not okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I was headed for hell. Especially with that fentanyl stuff going on right now, I probably wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You know, God pulled me out of it before that stuff hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, I Brother Poole makes a point. I'm standing up. And any other pastor, but, you know, I'm kind of partial. But God's got to see. If it ain't nobody else praising him, Stoney's going to be praising him because Stoney's got to. I can't afford to slack up at all. Because if I slack up and I get fall back in any kind of way, then that child of mine that was thinking, you know what, yeah, I might go to church with daddy now, but wait, you know what, he wearing a pair of shorts out there? You know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? If he sees me doing something different.
Yeah, going back to what
you're... Going any way that ain't consistent. And my kids call you out. They don't care. They don't call. Look, Piper, I asked her, I said, baby, she birthed this last year. I said, you know, you want to go out to Monroe and go see a movie for your birthday? She told me straight up, Brother Poole preaches against that. He hit me with it. I said, that's all. I ain't been to a theater since. You know what I'm saying? And that child don't think, Brother Poole, if ain't nobody else paying attention to you, that child is, because she calls me on stuff every day. If it buries any little bit, she'll hit me. But yeah. Poole preaches against that.
And just like you said at the beginning, you don't realize who's watching you. And like you mentioned, Caden, and you mentioned Sawyer and Piper, and they're all watching you, and they can tell a difference. Even if they don't know exactly what was happened, they can see something is different, for better or for worse. Yeah. So as we're closing today, man, I'm just blown away by that testimony. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really good place to be in, to realize that we owe God our everything.
Everything, because
he didn't have to. He would have been justified to let us fall to our own devices.
Mm-hmm.
But what does he give us in return?
Yeah.
He literally fills us with his spirit and gives us the best life we could imagine.
I think about all the blessings that I missed not living for. Just in the last, December 18th, it'll be 5 years I've been completely sober, drinking nothing, completely sober, no cigarettes and all that by the 28th. You know, 5 years, that's a long time. And I have been blessed abundantly, And I'm 48 years old. There's a whole lot of time there. I could have used some blessings, but I was too stupid to, you know. And I'm going to tell you another thing. Inviting people to church, Jeremy, when I was out there in the world, four people invited me to church. You, your daddy, James, and Chase Womack. Four people. Now, I didn't go, but I never forgot that. And when I come home, I had been home about a week, and I went to your daddy's just to thank him. You know, you invited me to church. You know what I'm saying? You knew what I was doing. I ended up, after that one-step meeting with him that Thursday night, you know what I'm saying? And I think your daddy, me and him, I catch him at them ball games, and them ball games is tough to watch. So me and him get up and talking about Jesus, you know what I mean? I find myself, like, if I go to a place like that, I'm looking. I say, okay, apostolic day. I'm going to find somebody, and I'm going to go sit by them, because we're not going to get up there, and we're going to be talking about, I need as much God as I can get, as often as I can get, and witnessing and asking. You know, a friend of mine said that, I don't know where they get these numbers at, but he said the average person has to be introduced to God or have an encounter with God or invited to church 6.5 to 7 times before they accept God. You don't know if you're number one or if you're number seven, but you need to make that effort. You know what I'm saying? Just like you say, you're in Sandy Lake store, hitting people up, hey, make that your hub.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if we got 20% of the people that are dealing with alcohol, drugs, and addictive issues and just out there and seeing right now, but just especially just alcohol, drugs, and whatnot, we got 20% of them in church, every church in Catahoula Parish would have to build.
Yeah.
That's right.
They would have to be. Yeah. They would have to, you know, either that or the fire marshals had to turn their head. You know, I mean, and that's real. And the need is out there. I mean, it ain't like we've got everybody that we could get in. We ain't touched scratch service. I mean, Catahoula Parish needs, LaSalle Parish needs. You know what I'm saying? And it don't cost nothing to invite somebody to church.
That's right.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And I'm glad you left us with that thought that you don't know if you're number one or number seven. And I know that my husband tries to be all seven times some people in the Sandy Lake store. So I'm praying that it's going to make a difference. And we're going to join you in prayer for your family. And we're just going to pray on all those years that you were away from God, that God heaps that blessing on your kids. And that you get to see that, because that's gonna be awesome. And
it's gonna happen. I'm not gonna stop praying for it either. Rapture gonna come? Are they gonna come? I ain't stop praying for it. I just ain't gonna do it.
Well, we're gonna believe with you for it. But thank you guys for listening today. If this blessed you, please do us a favor and share this. Make sure to go on there and leave a review. It helps others find this podcast. And I just thank you for tuning in. God bless. Mm-hmm.